before we talk about AI, breaking news last week, Summit Carbon Solutions, the company that's for 6 years now, 5 years now, has been pushing to build the carbon dioxide pipeline network across the upper Midwest. They used to claim that it was about climate change. You know, they were going to sequester this carbon, protect us from climate change, do their part, you know, for the clean energy revolution. And you know what? They've scrubbed all that from their website. You can't find
now they say it's regime change.
No, now they say they're not. Well, yeah, right. Yeah, but now they say instead of sequestering it in a big hole in the ground up in North Dakota, they're going to use it for enhanced oil recovery.
No, so for fracking.
Yeah, well, exactly. Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah, and you know, I mean, who didn't see that coming? When I questioned them back in 2021, in September 2021, at one of their first public hearings, they would not commit to not using it for enhanced oil recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was clear.
Well, I hope people in this area like earthquakes added to the other natural disasters.
That's been a problem in Oklahoma.
That's correct.
Yeah. No. It's well, it won't be. It'll probably be probably North Dakota. Or now they're actually indicating that maybe Wyoming is where they'd be doing this.
Uh-huh.
I know. It's just such a scam. It's a scam all around. They're liars. They're just taking advantage of, they would get over $1 billion of public money a year if they complete this network.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's sickening to see.
Well, this
happening.
Is one of the reasons why that, you know, because just recently, I guess what, E15 got approved for year-round production.
Yeah.
And, but it's why ethanol is not in any way a benefit, because so much energy is used to extract the natural gas or oil that's needed in the process to make it from corn.
Yeah.
That just adds on to the environmental decrement.
Yeah, and now the oil they want to extract using CO2 is so hard to reach. They've got to use something. They've got to resort to the equivalent of fracking to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope these liars continue to, you know, to expose themselves, and that people continue to push back. I mean, they said on September 13th, 2021. We have no plans to use this for extracting for oil extraction.
Yeah, yeah.
I have it on record. Yeah, Kathy filmed the me asking them this question.
Well, how do we know it's not a deep fake?
Because we were there. We know it wasn't deep fake. And that was, besides, that was pre deep fake. But speaking of deep fake,
yeah,
here we go. AI, folks. We're going to talk about AI. Charles, did you have a chance to see AI Doc?
Unfortunately, I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
Okay.
No, not yet. I do want to see it, though. I didn't even know where it was out there until...
Yeah, until I told you about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and it's an interesting movie because it's the guy tries to present a balanced perspective on it, coins the term apocaloptimist, meaning that he sees the potential for, you know, destruction of the human race, but also the possibility that there's some optimistic... There's some positive uses that might come out of this. I'm in the apocalypse camp, Charles. How about you?
I mean, my experience with AI is that when it's, you know, as was discussed in a recent segment on IPR, when you're using special purpose AIs where what's being scrubbed from the internet is not the totality of the internet, it's simply you know, what are validated sources of information that are being aggregated. And when you're trying to do something very specific, it's very useful.
Give us an example.
For instance, I use an AI called Open Evidence a lot.
Open Evidence.
Which is, you know, HIPAA compliant.
So it's related to your work
as a
physician.
It's related to, exactly. And because of where it's pulling its references and literature from, I find it highly helpful for aggregating with links to the literature that it's quoting, so you can read for yourself whether the AI is hallucinating or not.
Okay, so why wouldn't a patient just do that on his or her own and bypass the
well, what are they going to do with that information? And
well, it depends what
the literature. The literature is not written in a layperson friendly language. The literature is written with statistical techniques you have to understand. So the point of it is that you as a physician can put in maybe information about a patient who's sitting in front of you, and it serves to tweak your considerations of what might be the differential diagnosis, for instance. and then you can work from there. I mean, you know, the problem in medicine is the expectation that you walk in and you're supposed to, off the top of your head, just be able to spout off a complex differential diagnosis for something that maybe
the doctor's expecting.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, and it's always, I've never understood, because you're carrying around a device on your hip, which would allow you to say, I'd like to step out of the room for a second. I want to look something up. I mean, that's, you know, that's fine. And that, and this open evidence, for instance, is extremely directive.
Okay, so that's a potentially useful aspect of AI.
That's correct.
What about all the other aspects that aren't so helpful, and even you know, there are people who are very involved with AI who are very deeply concerned about where this stuff is going.
Well, you see, the problem is that a lot of what we as lay people think about as AI are large language models. Basically, they're scrubbing the internet in totality, which means that if you go looking about vaccines, for instance, you're going to get research, medical research, and you're going to get
RFK.
Anti-vax. Right.
Right.
And the problem for the AI is that it doesn't really have an intrinsic capability to know how to weight which information is valid and which is not. That's part of its, quote, hallucination problem. The other problem is that it's an exacerbation of the problem, let's say, again, going back to medical literature. Okay, so information in medical literature will oftentimes, to make it statistically significant, will have arbitrary breakpoints. So let's say if a certain lab is 4.0, then it's associated with this diagnosis. And if it's 4.1, it's not. Well, it's pretty obvious that biologic processes are not binary. They're continuous. It's a continuous scale. So the likelihood that 4.1 has any meaning different from 4.0 as an arbitrary breakpoint makes no sense.
Okay, so take that analysis of AI's application to a medical situation, apply it to, say, war making.
Well, that's a great point. That's a great point because, you know, the fight between the Pentagon and Anthropic was about Anthropic, which is Claude AI, you know, Claude is their AI product.
Right.
Anthropic spent a lot of time with ethicists and philosophy people as to what should be allowed to be done with Claude. And basically they were saying to the Pentagon that the Pentagon could not use Claude to produce autonomously performing weaponry, independently, not human-guided weaponry.
But meaning that the technology is capable of doing that, Anthropic was putting restrictions on its own capacity to allow that to happen with its tools.
Correct. And, of course, that, you know, that's not maximum lethality, since we know that's the purpose of the Department of Defense.
Under Hegseth and Trump.
Correct.
Sure.
So that's not maximum lethality if they're constrained by, you know, as far as Hegseth's concerned, you know, any application of ethics to war is
counterproductive.
Exactly. Should be avoided.
It's not what Jesus would do. Jesus would go all out and just nuke everybody.
Well, if you're an end timer, I mean, I guess it's the way to go. But
and isn't Hegseth an end timer?
He is an end timer.
And that guy's in charge of the Department of Defense. So no wonder he doesn't want to use an AI model that puts some restrictions on lethality.
Right. And the problem with AI is, especially in the large language model type AI, is that when it's been researched, there are a number of things that are not explained by the programming. For instance, a lot of the large language AIs are extraordinarily sycophantic, something that I'm sure, you know, Trump would recognize, because those are the kind of people he's surrounded by all the time.
Right. Well,
right. You know.
Yeah, well, when you're a narcissist, you want sycophants.
Right. And
yeah,
so
there's,
you know,
no option.
The AI assumes you're a narcissist and is very accommodating.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when, you know, they've done kind of situations where they'll give the AI a situation where some people are trying to turn the AI off. The AI will do things to like blackmail those people
to preserve,
preserve the AI. And then, so where the ethics of the AI is coming from is a little bit obscure.
That sounds like a direct scene of involving Hal and David from.
But it,
from
it does. It absolutely
Odyssey.
Does.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. In fact, you know how, as oftentimes, science fiction anticipates.
Yeah.
What we're going to be dealing with.
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Well, I'm not sure we've ever seen a well, I don't think the Thresher went down because a giant squid pulled it down.
No, but it predicted the submarine.
It did predict the submarine, right, that's correct. Right.
Yeah, and 2001 Space Oddity predicted, Barbie.
No, but it, absolutely. These are the kinds of difficulties. And then the other issue to consider is, what about the people who are sort of pushing this?
Yeah.
You know? 25% of the lobbyists right now in D.C. are working for either AI companies themselves
and
or affiliates
of AI
companies.
That's usually, there have always been an incredible number of lobbyists in Washington, way more lobbyists than members of Congress.
But the point is that what are they trying to do? They are trying to avoid any regulation, any consideration that they would be. They want the same thing that the social media companies, because basically a lot of them are the same company. They want the same deal. They're not liable for what the AI leads to people doing. They're not liable. I mean, you know, even going back to the issue of medicine, if you want a bunch of AI docs, who's liable for the AI when it's negligent?
Yeah, well, not the doc, some robot, right?
Well, but there is no robot.
The head of the company.
So far, there is no robot.
Right, yeah, I know. Like calling them robots because it to some extent, humanizes AI.
Well, you know, that's one problem. The other problem is think about the nature of the people who are running these companies.
Yeah.
All these companies are basically, they basically are hugely in debt. The only one that's making money, and even it may not be making money right now off AI, is NVIDIA, which makes the chips. Yeah. But the companies themselves are hugely indebted, putting up all these data centers and everything else.
So there was a program on public radio recently, On Point, a guy named Gary Marcus. He founded two AI corporations.
Right. He wrote a book back in like 2001?
2024.
He wrote a number of books earlier in the century.
Okay, sure. But the one in 2024, Taming Silicon Valley, how we can ensure that AI works for us. Well, he says, you know, there's a threat of an AI oligarchy, and he was asked on Point whether he thinks, you know, where we're at in relation to the AI oligarchy. And he says, well, it's materialized. It's here.
Sure.
It's here, you know.
And the interesting thing is that even there are oligarchs among the AI oligarchy who at one time were certainly heavily affiliated with Democratic causes.
Right.
And yet their companies now, to make money, are totally on the other side. Palantir is absolutely the biggest example of that.
And I'm not sure any of them are truly partisan. I think they will align with the power elite to assure that there is as little to no regulation as possible, that they can just do whatever they want, and that they can accumulate as much power and control through these systems they're developing.
That's true, but then why would a company like Palantir, led by somebody who is, again, seen as a liberal, a progressive...
Who is that again?
God, I can't remember the name of the guy who runs Palantir, but the company itself is at the center of the overwhelming surveillance we now undergo.
Yeah.
You know, the license readers helping, you know, ICE being able to localize where, you know, the worst of the worst. Oh, Alex Karp, that's right, that is his name. You know, the worst of the worst are, so they can help, you know, take immigrants out of the country. I mean, and let's face it, I mean, the surveillance state, as I talked about with you probably 2 years ago, I said, you know, the drive to push undocumented immigrants out of the country will turn our whole country into a surveillance state. And that's exactly what's happened. And the people who are doing it are the, you know, supposed best and the brightest in Silicon Valley.